Today, we're going to continue with the sermon series entitled Herbert W. Armstrong, and this is part 6. Before we pick up from where we left off in the last part, there are some things I wanted to mention here. First of all, before I even get into this, there are a couple of things that I referred to that some have asked questions about. One was an area where I was talking about taking medications. I take medications. My point was, and what I was talking about, some people can take too much, you can get too involved in medications to a point sometimes that it can become addictive, they can be harmful to you. I sometimes marvel when I watch some of the ads on TV anymore. There are some things I just flat would not take. I mean, why the risk involved in some of the things that are out there are so dangerous that it's hardly worth the risk of taking them. So again, you have to use wisdom, but I've been mentioning some of these things because there are some situations in God's church where people have become too dependent upon those things. And so you have to use wisdom and ask God for guidance and direction and soundness of mind, wisdom in what we do. So again, just hopefully that clarifies some of that, some things you need to take. Otherwise, your body is going to quit on you. God lets us experience things on a physical plane, things we're able to do nowadays that we're able to learn from. That's the way it's been for a long time. I remember a long time ago, because I mention this because the church has gone through a lot in the 60s, 70s, on up through time there of ideas about faith and the fact that some felt that it would be wrong to go to a doctor. Some felt it would be wrong to take medication. Some people wouldn't take it, and some people to this day and some of the scattered groups have difficulty with that because of the past, thinking that it's not a matter of faith if you go to a doctor. Mr. Armstrong used doctors all the time. He had to go to doctors. He had care. And so why we didn't pick up from that within the church, I don't fully understand why people or ministers didn't grasp the balance there, but they didn't. And anyway, some have had some battles with some of those things. I remember one time when I first got in the ministry, an individual came up to me and asked me if it was okay when he was going to the dentist if he took, Novocaine. And I said, well, it's either that or bite the bullet. Because basically there was a show out that time, a Wild Western, about biting the bullet anyway as well. But I don't know if he thought that was funny or not, but I thought, hey, it's one of the two. You can do it the tough way, the hard way, let him do it without anything. Me, I want Novocaine. Anyway, another one, comments about drama, drama, drama. And I referred to as the world turns. I am not telling people you can't watch TV. You like as the world turns, that's your business. I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about our personal lives, that sometimes we can get too much drama in our life and our life begins to revolve around the drama that's going on and not being focused like we need to be on God's plan and what God's doing in our life, and those things can take you away. There are situations in the church today where people get so involved, have gotten so involved in things having to do with their family, and those not a part of the body as well, obviously, in so many cases, and they get pulled away from the church. We have people still leaving God's church or being put out of God's church for various reasons right now. And I've also made comments how that there's a reason why we're going through this series right now, and a lot of it has to do with what we've done with the last 3 years. And as a whole, God's church has let down because... And I made comment about it. This has nothing to do with the sermons we receive from the evangelists. Some people have asked about that, made comments about it. We were given great sermons throughout that period of time. God inspired and blessed us to be fed. But I know also that because guidance in the sense of correction of situations that are taking place wasn't there, because wasn't their place to do so as a whole. It's for God's apostle to do. And because that wasn't being given, the tendency, the human nature is, and because of the situation in the church in that respect, was to begin doing a little bit of coasting. Too much coasting. And candidly, a spirit of Laodicea. I've been there, I've done that, I know exactly what that spirit is. And it has gone through the church way too much. And we need to get refocused right now because of where we are, because of the book coming out, and the work that's going into it right now. Hopefully it'll be out by the feast. That's the plan, that we'll be able to have it. You've already read it. But again, to have a book in hand, to be able to have it online now, and do some of the things we're going to do with it, and I'll bring those things up as we go along a little bit later. But again, we need to be deeply focused because this is candidly about where we are. The book is about what's going on in God's church right now. The book is about what's going on in the world right now. And I hope we grasp, even as we go through some more of what Mr. Armstrong says, that we grasp a little more fully where we are in the world and what's taking place in the world. Things are heating up out there in a very big way. They're changing things that are taking place, changing the minds or reinforcing certain things in the minds of various people in government who make decisions and choices about where the world is heading and what they're doing. Those things are very much at play right now in a very powerful way. There are things going on with Australia. I don't know about Canada as much. I haven't kept up with some of the things going on up there, but in the U.S. and Great Britain right now that are very important as far as prophetic things are concerned and choices that they're going to be making and what's going to happen to them as time goes along, plus other nations as well, obviously, that's falling into place. So we need to be very much alert, stirred up in spirit, and to fight against what it says back there. This is not a Laodicean period, but that spirit is still a fight no matter when people lived in God's church, no matter what period of time they lived in. There is instruction on those seven eras of things that are powerful and beneficial, but our human nature, especially in this modern age of technology, it's very easy to have that spirit slip in. And it's not something you can afford to do. You have got to fight for this way of life. If you want it, you've got to fight for it. And we have people out here who are not fighting for it. And we need sometimes to be shaken up. Some people have had some shaking up, and I've been very pleased with their response. Received strong correction personally from me. And they've responded in repentance and are striving to make those changes in their life right now. And that's needed. We want everybody to make it through this. We want everybody to be strong in God's Spirit. But you have to decide, what do you want? Do you want this? How much do you want this way of life and what God is offering you? Because if you want it, you really got to fight for it. There is nothing else. There is nothing else that comes close in comparison to what God has placed before us and how blessed we really are. So again, you have to fight for it and not get pulled away, not get your focus on something else, or just get to a point where we let down and think we're going to coast into the millennium. No one who is called is going to coast into the millennium. That's Laodicean. That's a wrong, lukewarm spirit. You've got to make changes. You've got to fight for it with all your being, truly. So, we're going to get into the flow of this week's sermon. In the beginning of the last sermon, we looked at some very specific areas of Scripture, and it was at the very beginning, and I want to go back and just touch upon something that was covered at the beginning of the last sermon in part 5. It's Haggai chapter 2 and verse 4. It says, "Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, says the Eternal, and be strong, O Joshua, and be strong, all you people of the land." Now, the meaning of these words and things that are stated here have a great deal of meaning because, candidly, this wasn't written as a whole for their period of time. It was written to them. There were things they were told. But there are things that also are repeated prophetically through time. Things that applied to some of the apostles and different ones in the beginning, that applied to Mr. Armstrong, that apply to me now. There are different things that take place through time where there is a focus that God gives to us as His people. And anyway, I just want to read the rest of this. Again, verse 4. "Be strong, O Zerubbabel, says the Eternal, and be strong, O Joshua, and be strong, all you people of the land." Now this is talking to the church. This is talking to God's church, that we are to be strong. And how can we be strong? It's not talking about something you do physically as a whole. It's not talking about going out here and working with in the gym, although that's good for us if we keep up in our exercise and so forth. But it's about something that's spiritual in your life. It's about something that you can do that God offers to you, but you can't do it on your own. You can't work it up. It comes from God Almighty. And that's the whole point of this. The strength, the power, the life we need comes from God. And we have to go to God to receive it. We have to go to God to ask for it. We have to focus our minds and our thinking, our prayers and so forth, and our habits in life, everything that we do toward this, toward becoming stronger spiritually in our life, becoming more focused. Like right now, we need to be very deeply focused on where we are and where we're going in God's church and what's in front of us. And if you don't see it in time, you will. I'm going to say it over and over and over again. It is about the book. It is about the message in the book, because that's what's going to go out into the world. That's what's going to go out as a final, if you will, words that are spoken to mankind. Are you going to listen to God? Because you haven't for 6,000 years. Now is your opportunity, because now comes is a judgment upon this earth. Now we're at the end of 6,000 years. Do you want to live into a new age? Do you want to come through what the world's going to begin to experience? We really, in God's church, can't grasp and understand the magnitude of what's in front of us. You can't understand the magnitude of what's going to be when semis quit going up and down the highways out here. Because right now there are a lot of semis that travel up and down the highways. And when the petroleum isn't there, when certain things aren't there, and you can't get the things that you rely upon, that you can go down to your grocery store or wherever and pick up on a regular basis, and it's not there, your life is going to make some changes. And you're going to learn to live by a kind of faith, if you will, that we haven't had to apply in the same way. Now, we've had to live by faith. We live by faith in the time we're called. But this is going to be something unique in the sense of that which is very physical in our lives. When you can't go over and flip on the switch and the electricity comes on. When you can't go over and turn on the fire and the gas comes out. In other words, wherever, if that's the main source of heat you have. There are going to be cases, brethren, where that stuff's just going to flat stop. And it's not going to flow anymore. And we're very dependent upon it today. We really are. So just to what we're getting ready to go through physically, we can't grasp as a whole. And so that's not even counting what's going to follow. And the cause of some of those things that bring some of those things to pass. And there's going to be a reliance upon God Almighty, a desire toward God Almighty to intervene in our lives. And He will. If we're doing our part. If we're fighting for this way of life now. It's not a last minute repentance type thing either. Oh, I should have been doing this. I should have been doing... Now is our time. Now is our opportunity to press forward and become strong and stronger. It's not something that can happen at the last minute. And whether God will intervene in those situations, that's... Candidly, there's still a refining taking place within the body. And either we shape up or we're shipping out. That's what we're going through. It's a continuation. The measuring of the temple has not stopped. Just because we went through that primary period, there are still things going on. And we need to take it seriously and understand we're in judgment. We're being judged. God's people. We're to be a strong body when Christ returns. A strong church, spiritually. Strong. Be strong. So be strong, all you people of the land, says the Eternal. And work. Work. Yes, it's spiritual. But even sometimes just the fact of physical things in our life, we need to be doing certain things. We need to be active in our life. We need to be focused in our life. Because without that, if we're not doing, if we're not producing in our lives, whatever that means, whatever that might mean, then the tendency of being Laodicean or drifting or being lukewarm becomes very strong and very powerful indeed. So he says, and work, for I am with you. Then Mr. Armstrong, I'm repeating what we said in the beginning of that last sermon, he went on to say, as he was repeating the words there, be strong and work and get back of this thing. Now that was in 1978. And he was saying, telling the church then, get back of this thing. What's he talking about? He's talking about the church. He's talking about the work. He's talking about what God had given him to do at that particular time. And the fact that he was at a point in his life where death was at the door and he was being revived and strengthened and pushing forward in a work. And one of the primary messages at that time was, in essence, one of putting the church back on the right track. Because we went through a period of time, especially 75, 76, 77, in through there, where the church became atrociously weak. 3 to 4 years, a period of time, when people began to become far more liberal in their thinking and letting down and not obeying God's law like they should, and began to take in the world and the ways of this world. I can tell story after story after story of things that started happening in 75, and I've mentioned some of those, let alone 76, and Ambassador College and what it went through, and having to be closed and then reopened, and the things that were taking place there because of the ministry and because of the teachers that were there, the instructors, and people letting down. And they weren't pressing forward, and they weren't behind the work. They lost track of what the work was about. The work was about what Mr. Armstrong was doing and what he was preaching to the world and telling the world at that time. That's what the work was about. It was about a message that was to go into all the world, and then the end would come. And the primary message was going through him. That's just the way it was. Just the way it is. There is a way that God works, and he gives us opportunity to be a part of it. And that's so important to understand. I think of times past when people used to make fun of, not make fun of, but almost belittle or play down the role of our lives within the body and the church, and minimize the importance of tithes and offerings. And yet it's the primary means that God has always taken care of His people. The primary means by which God is taking care of His people. And so at the very beginning, even the establishment of the Levitical system was a means whereby God worked to keep the people focused on Him through a Levitical system. It was for the nations of Israel so that they could be focused upon things about God. Now, they didn't get it. They didn't understand it. They didn't understand the purpose of the offerings of tithing, let alone of the offerings that were brought in and the sacrifices. They weren't given that. But on a physical plane, it was still something that was unique to the nations of Israel as compared to all the other people around different nations who had all these screwy, weird, convoluted ideas about a God or a God family. I think of Egypt and all their ideas and things that they had, let alone some of the other ones around that region, Baal and anyway. And so God established something from the very beginning on a very physical plane that was to teach something very spiritual. And then God made it very clear in the book of Hebrews that those things now are passed along within His church, in essence. That's what it's talking about. And primarily the ability to sustain a ministry, to do whatever it is that God's focusing on at any specific time. And what was He focusing upon back in Mr. Armstrong's time? Building up a church worldwide. Making the church larger than it had ever been since it began in 31 A.D. Far, far larger at any one moment in time than it had ever been. To teach one of the most powerful lessons that God's people in the future could ever look back on and learn from. And it's one we need to know well, because it's going to be taught over and over and over again in the future. Why it happened exactly the way it did. That with a man like Mr. Armstrong, with the kind of conviction and power that he served God, his ability at writing, his ability at speaking, the blessing of being able to telecast, the broadcast, and everything else, and all the things that happened in raising up 3 colleges so that people could be taught and trained to go back out and work in these church areas, that in time they would not remain faithful. There was no way to govern their faithfulness. There was no way to guarantee that individuals baptized into God's church, having gone through instruction for 4 years, were put into the ministry, would go back out in the ministry and teach faithfully what they had been taught. Because you see, the evidence shows they didn't in time. They began to teach their own little ideas. That's a human trait, that people can begin to teach their ideas of what they think they're seeing and not understanding. You don't teach or say one thing that you have not been taught by God. If it comes through God, if it came through Mr. Armstrong to the church, that's great. Build upon that. Repeat it. Make it stronger. Whatever. But don't come up with some concoction of something that we have never heard before, because it doesn't come through you. And that's been an ongoing thing that has existed in God's church. It's happened through time. One of the biggest lessons we've got to learn, how God works. And so we had different ones, different teachers, instructors. Dr. Hay, that had these students. Mr. Armstrong couldn't be in every class and go through every class with the students and see if those instructors were being faithful. And I know that he believed for a long, long time that they were faithful. How would you think that the very ones you taught who became evangelists in God's church, that they would begin to teach things that weren't true and weren't correct that Mr. Armstrong didn't teach? So, and in the reports coming in, he wasn't given true reports all the time. He was given what people thought he wanted to hear instead of telling the truth of what was really going on all the time. That's what happened. I get a little worked up when I talk about these things, because this has been something that's been going on in God's church, and it's something we have to learn so deeply in our mind. God's government. Do you know that there's a way that God's Spirit works in your life? And we have to learn that. Everything comes from God the Father and Jesus Christ. And from then, where does it go? Right here. A few years ago, I couldn't have said that, but I have no qualms about saying it, because that's true and that's the way it is. When Mr. Armstrong was alive, it was through Mr. Armstrong. And no truth came into God's church save through that man. That's the only way it came into God's church. And yet ministers started teaching something different, because you can't guarantee faithfulness in someone who is begotten of God's Spirit and still in this human body. That's a marvel. That's the very reason that God's government has to govern in the world and in the church in the future, because they have the same mind. They are at one with God. Spirit, the same Spirit. God always dwelling in them, and them always dwelling in God on a spiritual plane. Now that is an awesome thing to understand, because human beings, under various kinds of circumstances, and God allowed that to take place and gave those freedoms, and with those freedoms after time, freedoms of Mr. Armstrong not being around, freedom of a responsibility, and after a time, people took to themselves things they shouldn't have taken to themselves and began to teach things that were wrong. I started to say, Dr. Hay, started teaching at 14, 15 in Ambassador College. And not all of them necessarily, but there were a smear of ministers who were taught by him that went back out believing 14, 15 Passover. That goes on into the 15th. Not a bit of Passover goes into the 15th, and that was a sick, perverted, disgusting thing that took place to change part of God's truth and law of something Mr. Armstrong made very, very clear even in the book about holy days or God's holidays, which, you know, he made it very clear. And there was a heading in there that says something to the effect of 14, 15 question mark. And there are three scriptures he quotes, three basic scriptures, but it wasn't good enough for them. And they started changing it. And so a lot of those ministers went out. I think of the group that I was with when I first came out after the apostasy. And it came out that something like half of all that ministry believed in a 14, 15 Passover. And others didn't. How can you build bridges? How can you have unity and oneness? How can you have God's blessing in your life or in a body or a group of people when something so far off the wall is being taught? So again, what an incredible thing that God allowed to be taught, allowed to take place, a church that became large to teach one of the most powerful lessons ever. And I wish I could remember Mr. Armstrong's exact words on that. But it was basically to the effect that the only one that can truly be trusted, God Almighty. Through time, only God Almighty is pure, true, all the time. All the time. Faithful. All the time. To one way, to His Word. Just the way He is. And those who become a part of that same body will be the same way. And so they are going to go out and teach. Because it can't be left to human beings. The Church of God, the worldwide Church of God, prove that truth. Very powerfully so. So we have such great lessons and things we've gone through in God's church that we can know today that people in times past or people who are scattered still haven't learned yet. And one day they're going to come to learn it in a very powerful way, the importance of what God is doing in bringing about His kingdom. And so we're a very small group, but it's still about what is being done through a work that God is doing. God is doing a work. God, like Jesus Christ said, He said, I work and my Father works. To this day, I work and my Father works. There are things He's doing to fulfill His purpose and His plan, and will be from here on through time. There are always going to be things to be accomplished, to be done. It's beautiful, awesome. And He lets us share in it. He lets us experience that with Him. And so in the church, we share in that. That's why I love the verse the way it says. Be strong. Not just Zerubbabel, not just Joshua, and all you people in the land. And for us, it's all the people in God's church. His desire for us to be strong, to be at one, to be of unity of mind, to think the same things, to be in agreement with all the truths we've been given. That's why I talk about 57 truths. If we don't believe every one of them, if we're not in unity with all of them, something's wrong in our mind spiritually. Because, well, there's a oneness, and then there's that which is not one. And if it's not one, it's divisive. Hurts the body. So Mr. Armstrong said very powerfully, get back of this thing. And so I mention it again. This book that's going out, will people listen? I don't hold out a lot of hope that they will. And yet I do hold out hope that they will. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Knowing human nature, knowing the way people are, unless they're brought so low, unless they're humbled so powerfully and so mightily, that they begin to listen. That's the hope. It won't be like Nineveh, where Jonah came in, and because of some of the discoloration of his skin, and because of the message he was carrying, and because of the matter of the fish and everything else, and their beliefs at that particular time, for them to listen and to be stirred like they were. And I believe with all my being, God brought that to pass as well. God is all so powerful, so almighty, far beyond our thinking comprehension. But to prepare them, that's the hope I do have. That the only way that peoples and nations are going to listen in any case is because of how God's working now, how He is working right now with them and individuals. That when the message comes along, when certain events come along, that there will be hope for them. But they still have to make the choice, don't they? And that's where it's kind of frustrating, because you see the pride, especially in Israel, and their history. Oh, I hope that people will change. I hope that there will be some nations that change, and they're certainly being given the opportunity, but we'll have to wait and see as to what takes place. But this is your life. This is your life. This is what you support. This is what you're behind. It's not just about our conquering and overcoming. That's going to be given to all people at a certain time in life. All people are going to be given that opportunity in time, as a whole. Not everyone. We understand that because of the mind being set. But as a whole, in the Great White Throne, think of all the people. During the millennium, the opportunities that are there, but especially in the Great White Throne, all the people. But we weren't called to become a part in the Great White Throne. We weren't called. Well, some of us have been called to live on in the millennium. But that's unique for us to be able to go do that. Others in times past, all those before us and up to this point in time, the calling was about a work, the first phase of God's work to bring us up to this point in time. And so that's awesome to be a part of it. What is that? What is that work? Well, Mr. Armstrong made it very clear what it was then. It was to back Him up. It was to support. It was to be behind. It was to help do whatever He was focused upon that God gave him to focus upon. And so that's what He's talking about. And He's talking about the church and the growth of the church, and He's talking about a message to go out in the world and so forth. So again, Haggai chapter 2, verse 4, "For I am with you, says the Eternal of Hosts." And going on here, I guess I didn't read the last part of that. Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, says the Eternal, and be strong, O Joshua, and be strong, all you people of the land, says the Eternal, and work, for I am with you. And then, says the Eternal Host, according, verse 5, according to the word that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, so my spirit remained among you, do not fear. So, again, we don't have to fear. If we're responding to God, be strong, and that's what God desires. And for Him to tell us that, you know what that means? He means He wants to pour out more of His power, His life in us. He wants us to become stronger. He wants to give us the help to become stronger. But we have to want it. We have to desire it. We have to cry out for it. We have to work for it too. And not just spiritual. Physical too. To be focused properly. And so again, powerful scriptures. And I think what it says here about coming out of Egypt and what we, and as it says here, according to the word, when God began to draw us and work with us, whenever that point was, when we came to a point of baptism and that agreement that we made with God, that is so, so important to understand what we said and the word we gave God. I am yours. I want what you have placed before me. This is not about my will, wanting my way. It's about whatever it takes to yield to serving you and what you have planned in your purpose for me and within the body. So again, we're reviewing this because more really needs to be said about this. About what this is talking about, and at this point it needs to be far better understood by some in God's church, because we're either making changes in our life right now and realizing there's been some coasting in our lives, and acknowledge that, admit that, and recognize that has to change, and it can't be that way any longer, and we have to throw ourselves into what God has placed before us. And whatever changes we need to make, whatever we need to apply ourselves to more so, we need to be doing it. We need to be doing it because we need to be preparing for what's in front of us. And God's giving us some time to do that. I believe we have a good, strong year to accomplish those things. But again, not a time to coast. This is a time to use this year wisely that God has given to us. So again, it's essential that we grasp the importance of the fact that we work. And now this is going to vary because of age or because of health and so forth, and everyone's different, but I feel a strong need of talking about some of these matters. But in too many cases, there are situations where some need to work more or work harder, to be focused in your life more, and whatever that means, to produce, to be active. And if it means as well about the church and about what we have opportunity for, again, there are age factors, there are schooling factors, there are health factors. I understand all that. But I also understand there are situations in people's lives where we can do more or we can apply ourselves more fully. I'm just going to talk about work alone. I think of what God gave us in the very beginning. He began to remold and refashion the earth so it would sustain life again. He did it for 6 days. Created man upon it, mankind. And the seventh day, it says he rested from all of his work. And he set an example there that he wants us to learn from as human beings, because he made us as human beings and he knows what's good for us, even as far as the health of our minds and our thinking by how we apply ourselves in life. And it doesn't necessarily specifically mean a job per se, which in many cases it is a matter of work in that area, but it doesn't necessarily mean for full 6 days, but we're productive. We're, whether it be in our homes or whatever it might be, whatever we have to take care of, to dress and keep, as the scriptures talk about, that we've made comment about, and that means to cultivate, whatever it means to cultivate something in our life, and to keep it up, to keep what God has given to us. So there are all kinds of things in our life that we can do to be better focused. And you know what that has to do with the spirit and how you think? It has to do with your mind. It has to do with how you think about things around you in the world and what God has made available to us in the world. And that has a spiritual spinoff, if you will, to it, of how we think about the physical things around us, because we live in a physical world. That's our life, very physical. And God wants to know how we're going to use it. So, again, I think of someone that I respect highly, and I mentioned this thing about tithing and so forth and offerings. Some of the most enjoyable things I've ever read when people send to me about their work and about their striving at their job and seeking to do better at a job, perhaps in time, if able to do better or to get promotion or whatever it might be, that their focus is so they can tithe more. I respect that highly. I respect that mightily, because I've known of others that that's been their focus. It's about God's work. It's about our participation. If we're able to participate in that fashion, that we participate in it that way, because that's what God has given us opportunity to do. And so to throw ourselves into that, what an awesome opportunity to be part of God's work. And we can't minimize that part of it. And we tend to do that. It's like, well, you mean you've just been called to give tithes and offerings? Because I've heard of things like that in times past. You mean that's your part? That's a part of it, yes. Call it what it is. Part of it is your response and how you grow spiritually and how you're applying certain things to your life and as far as the work you're putting into it in your life, your desire for God's way. But just to be candid about it, a lot of it is about what we do. What we do. And again, I understand there are periods in time when we come to retirement. That's great. People have things they set up for retirement. That's great that we're able to receive it and the like. And that's fine. But I just want to mention something. I know someone that I really respect now who's up in her 80s. She's holding down two jobs. She works 25 hours a week at a quick stop, if you will. 25 hours. And I know that kind of job, that you're on your feet a lot. If she's not on it all the time, I'd be shocked. 25 hours a week. Now, does everybody in their 80s, 70s have to do that? No. But she wants to. I respect her highly for it. But that's not enough. She has another job, too. Cleaning. House cleaning. I think it's 3 hours a day. I think it's 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. I may have that wrong, but I think that's what it is. How can you not respect that and admire that? You know, I think of a woman I saw on TV here a while back over in Japan. I think it was Japan. And she's in her hundreds. She was quite a ways up in her hundreds, if I remember the story correctly. But she's up in a tree picking fruit. Wedged up there in a tree picking fruit and climbing around a tree, you know. Man, another 10 years on me, I'm not sure I'd climb a tree. But to drive yourself to be filled with that kind of life and that kind of a focus just in a physical way, it's to me a beautiful thing. Some were talking here earlier about certain ones that, some individuals out of Cambodia or whatever has some farms around here and they grow various things and gardens and so forth. Out there working hard, you know, in these gardens. If you've ever had a garden, you know what it's like to keep the weeds out and to keep things hoed and everything else and the harvest that goes into it, and you're doing it all by hand. And I respect things like that mightily. Whatever it might be in life that people apply themselves to, and there's a fullness and a reward that God gives us in things like that as well. That's a part of life, to be enjoyed. He's sharing things with us. And that's a part of the saying of cultivating and keeping. And sometimes it's a literal cultivating out here in the soil. You know, it might be cultivating with our family, with our children sometimes, or whatever it is you're doing in your life, whatever it is you're cultivating in your life to make your life better. And then keeping it up and taking care of it once it's there. And so, again, so many things have to do with how we think and why we think the way we do. And I'm talking about a work right now that God is doing, and not to minimize the things that we're a part of. Do we need more? We've been awesomely blessed. We have more now than we've ever had at any point in time. And it's for the book. I know what it's for. And we're going to be able to hit it hard for a period of time. I remember as we came up to 2012, all the way to the end, we started dumping everything, hundreds of thousands of dollars into advertising. And the more we dumped in, the more that came in. And it was like, we've got to do this quicker. And we upped the advertising more, and it just kept coming in. Incredible how God's blessed us. And now with 3 years of relative calm for a while, there are some reserves there. If we're blessed to use it, and if not, God will do it some other way. God has a plan. God has a purpose. He's going to accomplish what He's going to accomplish. But right now, it looks very good. And that, to me, is exciting because I know what's there. I know what it's for. So, again, but we all have a part in this. We all have a part to share as a whole. And I want to mention this because I think of something that Paul wrote, because I've had to write some individuals at times and tell them about this and remind them of what it says in 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. But if anyone does not provide, and the word basically means to plan ahead, which has to do, it is about planning ahead, it is about thinking, but it's a very part of our physical life and what we do and how we do it. But if anyone does not provide for his own, whether it be an individual for themselves or for a family that they're a part of, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith, the purpose of his calling or her calling, and is worse than an unbeliever. Why does it say it so strong like that? Or as it says in the King James, is worse than an infidel. Why does it say it like that? Because look at what God's given to us. Our minds have been opened up with the truth to understand God's way of life. We have been awesomely blessed. And so, if we don't use all that, even the most basic physical things of our life, what are we doing with what God has given to us? Are we just on the getting side of things? And because sometimes I've known salvation has been like that. People talk about salvation. It's like God owes us certain things as soon as we're baptized. It used to be the concept in God's church that if you're baptized and you die, you're going to be in the resurrection that when Jesus Christ returns. What? That didn't make sense. I've mentioned this before. I think of the young guy, 19, got baptized. 2 weeks later, was killed in an automobile accident. And I know the kind of life he was living before he was baptized, and it wasn't good. Anyway, it's like because you went through the motions, got baptized, had hands laid upon you, received God's Holy Spirit, that somehow it is owed to you if you die early or whatever it might be, that you're going to be in that first resurrection? Hardly, 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 hardly. You know, God has taught something very powerfully in that respect, that it all depends on our spiritual growth, and spiritual growth doesn't take place in 2 weeks' time. Transformation cannot take place in the human mind in 2 weeks' time, let alone 2 years' time. It takes a long time for this mind to be transformed in a spiritual plane to where one day God can say, you're there. Now I know you. Now I know you. And if we die, we'll be in a resurrection, specific resurrection. And so that's our desire, all who live on into in the millennium. Your desire is to live this way of life with all of your being, and to change, to be transformed, so that at the end of the 1,000 years, you're going to be resurrected in an awesome resurrection. And to be able to help people, billions that are going to be resurrected, live in the great white throne. I marvel at that, of God's planning and how He's doing all of this. I think of what's getting ready to take place now with 144,000 in a world that may have 1 billion. Maybe. I don't know. 2 billion people. Can't be a whole lot more, sadly. 2.5, 3, and 144,000 reigning, ruling, all scattered all over the world. That's incredible. 144,000 ruling in the God family, teaching as far as the church is concerned, governing as far as government's concerned, and there are those who are going to be working then under them in this human life. Awesome. Incredibly awesome. And so again, our desire, what we're able to be a part of right now, is incredible. I won't even get back to where we were in the sermon last week if I don't hurry up here. But anyway, then there is this part of that verse that needs to be seen for in the light that it is. Again, here about this thing about according to when you came out of Egypt. I have my notes here. I'm just reading what I had here again, and I really pretty much covered this. But again, this is a matter of obedience to God and His way of life. We learn how to make sound and productive changes in our life. And a lot of those have to do with physical things we do. And one of the big things about this involves... I'm not going to go through that part. Maybe save it for another sermon. I'm going to kick on in the next sermon here. I've said enough about this right now. I hope we're getting the message here. I hope in God's church, because once I came back out and I began to have a pulse, more of a direct pulse of what was happening in God's church, God began to show me some things. And over a period of time and visiting and so forth and getting feedback from things taking place all around the world, it became very clear. We haven't been doing the things we need to be doing in the last 3 years and responding and stirred up in spirit like we need to be. And now is the time to do that. And God is giving us some correction because He loves us. And He wants us to be a part to the end. And that's what I want. That's what so many of us want in one another. We want to see each other come through this successfully and to be blessed in their lives. Let's move ahead to where we left off in the last sermon. Zechariah chapter 4, verse 1. And the angel that talked with me, and he said here, Mr. Armstrong said, now this is the Zechariah, the prophet's book, and the angel that talked with him. So that Mr. Armstrong's comment in the middle of the verse here. And so again, and the angel talked with me, came again, and awoke me as a man that is awakened out of his sleep. Now, to me, that's profound for this period of time. Because that fits. That fits me, and that fits a lot of other people who've been called at the end of this age, when we were asleep. This is something here that's given through the things being discussed here that are leading to the end time and things on a spiritual plane that are being discussed here. And I think of the entirety of the church fell asleep spiritually. And that's what happened when we were vomited out of God's mouth and what it talked about in Laodicea. He wasn't going to keep us in the body. Because you can't be lukewarm and be in the body. It's doesn't fit. They don't work together. We have to work. We have to be active. We have to be in the body. We have to be doing things. And to be lukewarm is kind of like taking it easy and coasting. And God's way isn't that way. We have to apply ourselves physically and spiritually. They both go together. Powerfully so. And so he said to me, and Mr. Armstrong added here in the middle of this, and he says, and we need to wake up, brethren. And he said to me, what do you see? So again here, I think of what God has done to us in the church and what took place after the apostasy and when He began to wake different ones up. I think of the point in time when I was shaken and awakened, as soon as things began to happen, and God began to lead in a certain direction, God began to show certain things of why an apostasy took place, how an apostasy took place, what our true condition was spiritually. Began to see those things. Incredible. And then the growth that God has blessed us with since that time. But going on, it says, and I said, I have looked, and this speaking on what specifically was given here, and behold, a candlestick all of gold, and with a bowl upon the top of it, and his seven lamps thereon, seven pipes and the seven lamps which are upon the top thereof. And Mr. Armstrong then said, now a candlestick, you'll find in Revelation, the first chapter, is symbolically referring to the church. The church. All a part of God's work and what God does all the way to the end. All the way to Christ's coming. And then the church doesn't stop then. It just continues on, but and set up differently, obviously, than what it is now, because Jesus Christ will be here, the 144,000 will be here, and it's going to take on a different framework, if you will. Zechariah 4 and verse 3, "And the two olive trees by it, one upon the right side of the bowl and the other upon the left thereof. So I answered and spoke to the angel that talked with me, saying, What are these, my Lord? The angel that talked with me answered and said to me, Do you not know what these are? And I said, No, my Lord. And then he answered and spoke unto me, saying, This is the word of the Eternal unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, says the Eternal of hosts." Mr. Armstrong repeating that, those verses, that phrasing that at different times, making it very clear that everything that God does is by His power and by His might. His work is done that way, and we can be a part of that. We can be a part of that. His might, His power. When He says be strong, that strength comes from Him. You can't work it up. God's directly involved, but He gives us the opportunity to share with Him. That's awesome. That's exciting. He gives us an opportunity to share in what He's doing. And not many on the earth have been given that, have they? Incredible. So God is letting us know that it's not by might nor by power, but by His Spirit. And I think of the Worldwide Church of God and how big it was. It was too big. It was too big for things that had to take place at the end of the age for God to fulfill this in the manner in which He is going to fulfill it. Instead, God had a different purpose for what was to take place, and it was God's purpose to allow the church to become as large as it was. He blessed it to become that large. It was His purpose to allow the ministry to be taught and trained as they were and to go out and do what they did for one last mighty, awesome lesson to be taught to mankind before God sent Jesus Christ, His Son, to be King of Kings over all the earth, to establish His government on the earth. And it was this matter of what I've just gone through and talked about, that only God can be fully trusted. Mankind can't be. And so the size reveal that, and what took place through time reveal that. So you can't guarantee that people are going to remain faithful. Human beings aren't that way. Only God can ensure that. And God has ensured that with every apostle in His church and every prophet of His through time, because of what He has done, because of His power and His might and His molding and fashioning and working with those situations and circumstances in their lives, all of them. And so again here, verse 3, I want to pick it up again here, Zechariah 4, verse 3, "And the two olive trees by it, one upon the right side of the bowl and the other upon the left thereof. So I answered and spoke to the angel that talked with me, saying, What are these, my Lord? And he talked and said to me, Do you not know what these are? And he said, No, my Lord. Then he answered and spoke unto me, saying, Again, this is the word of the Eternal under Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, says the Eternal of hosts. And so again, we are small. And whatever takes place now, no one can take credit to themselves. And that's why the very thing that was given to Philadelphia and what took place then in the era that followed it, there is a spirit that entered into God's church of people beginning to be lifted up with all that they thought they knew and understood and begin to rely upon self instead of God. And that's why Laodicea came to being like it was. So again here, Mr. Armstrong made the comment here, "This building is being built by the Spirit of God, not by might and power, not by brick and mortar and wood and plaster and other physical materials, but by the Spirit of God." And so it's always been that way, but especially toward the end here and things we've gone through and things we've learned and what we can be a part of at this age. Verse 7, it goes on to say, "And who are you, O great mountain, before Zerubbabel? You shall become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with shouting, saying, Grace, grace unto it." Mr. Armstrong said, which is Christ, of course, speaking of Christ coming and bringing forth Christ in our generation. So I refer to this, talking about we are that generation. that which is left as a part of from worldwide, and went through parts of Philadelphia and lived through Laodicea and on into this particular age. So much of what's taking place right now is a remnant of that period of time. And then those that God has blessed to become a part to share in that work that God is doing at this particular stage and age, if you will. And so again here, Mr. Armstrong addressing some of those things, but Mr. Armstrong felt this was happening, going to happen in their time. It's kind of like God has allowed people to believe and see certain things in order to be able to maintain a certain focus, and yet it's about living his way of life and what we do with it. But I think of the early apostles, the early church, Paul included, and how basically you can tell very easily by things that they wrote and said that they believed that Jesus Christ was going to return in their lifetime. They were allowed to believe that for a purpose, for reasons. And then as time went along, they began to realize, different ones began to die, be killed, and so forth, and they realized God began to show them it's for later on. And certain things have to happen within the church first. So generation after generation in God's church have done the same thing that prophets and those of old have always done. Look for the coming of the Messiah. When is he going to come? When is he going to establish God's kingdom on earth? And so Mr. Armstrong was given to understand we live at the end of an age. He was given to understand in 1950 it was important to send people to Europe because the European Union at that time, or the European Common Market, was being formed. And he knew what it meant. God gave him the knowing that this is the beginning of a final stage of something that's to erupt at the end time, to lead into the time that Jesus Christ returns. So he sent some of the writers over there to be a part of that, to write about it in the Plain Truth magazine. Awesome. 1950. And believing it's getting close. And then a booklet written. 1975 in prophecy. And then coming to understand it's not yet. And maybe it was, brother. Because of things that have happened now, I wonder. And so Mr. Armstrong talks about things that were taking place at that particular time, and he goes on to address some things a little bit later in this Bible study that really apply to now. It's for our time. Awesome to understand where we are and that we're so close. Verse 7. Who are you, O great mountain, before Zerubbabel? You shall become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone. Again, as he talked about here, it says, do you realize that that was talking about Christ? And happening in our generation, as I mentioned now, going on in verse 8. Moreover, the word of the Eternal came unto me, saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house. And what is the house he's talking about? The one to whom Christ is coming. His hand shall also finish it, and you shall know that the Eternal of hosts hath sent me unto you. Awesome. Some of the things being stated there. The things we'll still learn more about as time goes along. But Mr. Armstrong took great courage in it at that particular time because of a type of things that were taking place then. And a matter of fact, that's what he says next. He says, I have taken great courage in reading that more than once. Maybe you can understand why. Because he believed at that moment in time that something that God had given to him as a commission as far as restoring truth to the church, that what he was given to that point in time was that he was going to be a part of that all the way to the end. But it wasn't meant to be so. There were the things that this was going to apply to later on that God was going to accomplish and fulfill. But again, that gave him strength at his age in his 70s, upper 70s to boot, to continue to press forward and do a work and finish a work that God had given him to do. Awesome. Verse 10. Who has despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice, and you shall see the plummet in the hands of Zerubbabel with those seven. What seven? It's talking about going from the beginning to the end as far as the church is concerned. Talking about all the eras that have led up to this particular point in time. And what's finally going to take place at the very end, and God bringing it all to a head. And finally, after all that point in time, and even the 4,000 years preceding that, and all those prepared that are going to be a part of 144,000. Awesome. It says that they are the eyes of the Eternal, which run to and fro over the whole earth. He went on to say, now I'd like to go back. No, let me make sure this is in my notes. Yeah, it's Mr. Armstrong. Now I'd like to go back to Malachi again. And let me just say that I usually put my notes here. I can't even tell if this is mine or Mr. Armstrong, but I think Mr. Armstrong is saying this. It gets pretty bad here when you can't read to tell what you have there. Anyway, he's talking about going back to Malachi again. And let me just say that in the New Testament, you will find that the church is built into a holy temple unto the Eternal. And it talks about every joint and every part of it is built by Christ and is built perfectly. Now, some are going to be cast out. But those who really are in the temple of God, in the church, are going to be here for the coming of Christ. So again here, he is very focused on what he's talking about, realizing here again that the temple of God is about the church. And that's what he was revealing in this particular Bible study, that so many ministers should have been there and weren't there, and just kind of a type of really what was going to follow, that they'd be the same ones who would deny that when finally one stone was cast down from another and the things that happened to the church at the end of the age. So I'm going to pause here for a moment. This is where it does get into my notes now. Finally, I knew I was writing something here somewhere. But anyway, he quoted Zechariah 4, verse 10. Again, this is something that's been quoted over and over again, because even 144,000 wasn't large, or 100,000 in the church wasn't large. I think it was 96,000 by the time we got to the point of the apostasy. But I'm trying to think of what the size of the church was by the time Mr. Armstrong died. Anybody, some of you that have been around longer, remember? It was a little over 100,000 at that particular time. 120, maybe something of that nature. Whatever it was at the time of Mr. Armstrong's death, maybe it wasn't even that large, but it was getting close to that. We were headed toward 144,000. That's why people felt the church had to continue on until there were that many adults in the church, because the idea was is that 144,000 had to be in the church before Christ is going to return. We had to be baptized. And we learned later on that's not what that's about. It's about through time. 6,000 years of what God's been doing in preparing that number. But again, the verse referred to here in Zechariah 4, verse 10, for who has despised the day of small things? And so when we at that particular time and worldwide would look at other religions in the world, really a very small church, and felt that that applies at that time. But it didn't. Look at our size right now. Who is looked down upon? Who has been ashamed by? Because that's what some of these words have to do with. A day of small things. The mockery. Oh, you're God's church? How many are in the church? Not very many. Not very many. A few hundred who are baptized? It's not very many. And so again, it takes a lot of conviction to recognize, and a lot of strength and belief and confidence and belief, and that comes from God, to grasp that God's working with a very small body of people at this time and has been for some time. And essence, God revealing very powerfully so that what he does, he doesn't need a large body. He doesn't need a large body. But he's going to bring a remnant, a very small portion of that entire amount, whatever it was, 96,000, whatever it was that was baptized by the time of the apostasy. And how many baptized now? Not that many. In comparison, puny, 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 small, small, small. And that's because God is going to show he is the one who does this work to the end and leads us to accomplish something awesome on the earth in a very small body of people. And so, again here, incredible what Mr. Armstrong was showing, but I want to go on here. Mr. Armstrong didn't continue on here in this particular Bible study in Zechariah 4, but he stopped there. Instead, this is right here at verse 10, and that's where it concluded as far as Zechariah is concerned. But I want us to continue on a little bit more today. Verse 11. Then I answered and said unto him, What are these two olive trees upon the right side of the candlestick and upon the left side thereof? You know, I marvel at this as much as I marvel about Mr. Armstrong understanding his commission in Matthew 24:14. And this gospel of the kingdom shall go into all the world, and then shall the end come. And what's the next verse say? It talks about what's going to happen at the end. It talks about what takes place, something that Mr. Armstrong was not a part of. And those things that would follow afterwards. It doesn't hurt if we turn over there and just read it. Matthew 24:14. I want to read it for exactly what it states there, but again, he didn't continue on so often because the rest of it didn't apply to him. But it does apply to us. It's what we've been living. Therefore, when you shall see the abomination of desolation, Mr. Armstrong was never to see that. He was never to witness that. And I'm thankful he didn't have to. Can you imagine? All the time, his entire life, and his wife Loma, and what they put into the work, into the church, and the sacrificing, and the hardships, and the betrayals that took place in his life, that he didn't have to see what took place later on. In 1994, when someone got up and said, the law basically has been done away. Went right back to traditional Christianity. Therefore, when you shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place. I still marvel to this day that those who are scattered, if they would have just accepted and understood what Mr. Armstrong taught in this Bible study, that the temple is the church and an abomination of desolation, like Mr. Armstrong. I think about Mr. Armstrong, what he said later on when he went out to the entire church, when he made it very clear that the Jews can't build a temple. The Levites don't exist. The Jews can't carry on the service of a temple anyway. It was given to the Levites. They don't even know who the Levites are. So how can they have a priesthood? Who is the high priest? Mr. Armstrong made it very clear. That isn't what it's about. It isn't about establishing something for a physical temple and that there's going to be an abomination like Antiochus Epiphanes where they bring in and slaughter a pig upon the altar again. And yet there's an evangelist out there to this day who says that those in his group, basically, that all they have to have, they don't have to build up the walls again, they don't have to build the temple again, but they do have to have an altar so that this can take place again. You think, it's all physical. The spirit left a long time ago because of going asleep. I look forward to the time that they're going to have the opportunity to be awakened from that. Therefore, when you shall see the abomination of desolation, well, we saw it. A lot of us, some of us here today, that saw some of those things in different church areas here that came at a different time that we'll call during the period of Philadelphia, if you will, as a whole, or even during the period of Laodicea. Came up to a period of time when we saw the abomination of desolation and what a hideous, sick thing, far worse than it's taking a pig up on a physical altar and desecrating a physical temple, you know, which was sick for that particular temple, but nothing compared to people who have God's spirit and then turn against God or turn their back on the things they've been taught. Because of being asleep spiritually, not having the strength to fight and resist what came. And as a result, every stone of the temple was, you know. So again, you talk about an abomination of desolation. That was it. We lived it. Incredible. A great falling away, an apostasy. Anyway, going back to the verses here. Read it again. Verse 11. Then I answered and said unto him, What are these two olive trees that are upon the right side of the candlestick and upon the left side thereof? And I answered again and said unto him, What are these two olive branches which through the two golden pipes empty the golden oil out of themselves? And he said, and he answered me and said, Do you not know what these are? And I said, No, my Lord. Then he said, These are the two anointed ones that stand by the Lord of the whole earth. Awesome. And so I marvel at these verses as much as I marvel at Matthew 24, verse 14. Mr. Armstrong stopped there. He stopped at verse 10 here in Zechariah because the rest was about another time and for a different purpose and for different people. Turn over to Revelation 11 while we're looking at that. It talks about the two anointed ones. Because this is something that the church has speculated on ever since I've been in God's church. Ever since I've been in God's church, there's always been speculation about who might fulfill that role. Revelation 11, verse 3. And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. And so people get in their eye, in their mind, what they think that means. And most always, what we think something means, when it gets into our mind, isn't what we think is there. And so they think there are things being said during that entire period of time, and that they're doing certain things for that entire period of time, and it does not say that. They will do it in that time, and there are things that are being accomplished in that time, and there are things that are already out there, and I think of the book that's already out there and has been for some time and started to be out there as it was. That's what it's about. Verse 4. Because that's the message at the end time, brother. Who is going to listen? Will anyone listen as in the days of Noah? Except this time, they can come through it if they will but listen to God and repent. Verse 4, these are the two olive trees. Tells exactly what it is. And the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. So, again, churches, yes. There are two church eras that God has called a remnant out of. And it's within those two church eras that God's doing what He says here. Awesome, if you understand. So anyway, I think of times, there were times, do you realize that there was a time, well, I don't even need to get on some of that. But I think of there was a time that Garner Ted was expected to be one of the two witnesses along with his father. Because we believe we're at the end time. And then when Garner Ted was put out, then speculation began. Some began to wonder, is it this evangelist or that evangelist and so forth. And such speculation was never good. Speculation like that is never healthy. The best thing, God will show it in His time. No one has to speculate about things like that. That kind of thing is not healthy spiritually. Matter of fact, sometimes it can be very, very, very unhealthy. You know why? Until it comes through God's apostle, it should not be delved into. It's not truth. Until something comes from God, what advantage is there of going into certain things? And some became quite adamant about what they believed, and they believed it was going to be that way, or whatever. Not a healthy thing. Matter of fact, again, as I said, it's very unhealthy to do things like that. So, we've learned that in God's church. There's no one that gets up and preaches about anything that isn't in unity and harmony with everything being taught by God's church. And God has given us the ability to have that. That's an awesome thing. Because that didn't exist in Philadelphia. That didn't exist at all in Laodicea. When there are all kinds of ideas swirling around out there that ministers were preaching in different church areas that weren't in unity with what God gave through Mr. Armstrong. Do you understand how horrible it is for someone to come along and begin to teach their ideas of what they believe a Strong's word might mean that conflicts with something that God has given? Whether they're right or wrong is immaterial. And the vast majority of time, they've been wrong. But sometimes God has allowed some to be right about a portion of something just enough to let them have enough rope to do to themselves what they're bent on doing. We are to be a body that's in unity and harmony and have the same truth, the same belief, always, 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 with whatever God gives us in the present truth, wherever we are. And I can't stress that enough. Anyway, let's go back to and continuing the flow with what Mr. Armstrong covered in the Bible study. In this particular case, he talks about going back to Malachi. Yeah, I guess it was earlier he said, now I'd like to go back to Malachi. So here we are again. He says, now over to Malachi again. I'd like to go right on from where I was. Now, he talked about a messenger coming to prepare the way for before Christ. And as I say, you will find it in a number of places, in Mark and Matthew and so on, that the one who prepared the way before Christ's first coming was John the Baptist. But I'm going to prove to you now that this is talking about not just the first coming, but a second. Let's go on reading the second part of the verse, which I didn't read before. It says that, so he's quoting now Malachi 3, verse 1. The Eternal shall suddenly come to His temple, which he adds here, which is the church. Isn't that awesome? 1978. And it wasn't known before that, but now, very powerfully so. He knows it's about the church, and he's teaching the church. And this went out to the entire church, even though that they weren't there on the front row or anywhere. Some of those evangelists and different ones who should have been there weren't there listening. They had the opportunity to listen to it again later on when it went out, because this was sent out. The Eternal shall suddenly come to His temple, as Mr. Armstrong said, which is the church, and the church, by the power of God and with the Holy Spirit in it, it will be made immortal, and its glory will be greater than the glory of Solomon's temple. But no human physical temple ever was or will be. So he was seeing things, understanding things. This is not talking about the glory of a physical temple. It's talking about a spiritual one. And so he went on to quote here in the verse here, even the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in, behold, he shall come, says the Eternal of Hosts. And so he said here, that is speaking of Christ. He is the messenger of the new covenant. Now the old covenant set up the children of Israel as one of the nations of this world. But Moses was the mediator of that covenant. It was a material, physical covenant of a material, physical people with only physical and national and material promises. No promise of the Holy Spirit whatsoever was given to ancient Israel, only some of the prophets. It's good to know and understand what he's saying here. Moses will be in the kingdom of God, and some of the prophets, of course, but not the people as a whole. It wasn't for the physical nations of Israel. He went on to say, now then, let's go right on. Verse 2, Malachi 3 and verse 2. But who may abide the day of His coming? As he said here, the coming of Christ. And who shall stand when He appears? Well, for us, that's a little different. There are going to be some who are already counted as a part of 144,000. They'll obviously be, but my question today, and because of the series we're going through right now, is will all of us, all the rest who are given opportunity to live on into a new age in the millennium, will we stand? And I've mentioned this in times past. I mentioned this at some feast sites in times past. I believe it's 2011 maybe, 2010 even. And asking some of the same kind of question here. Who's going to be standing? And it depends on where we stand now. It depends on how we stand now as to whether we're going to be standing then. And it's so important to understand. It depends on how we're applying ourselves and whether we're focusing upon the work and God, what God is doing as we need to be. He went on to say, I don't know whether we've had that yet on this particular stage or here or not. So he's talking about the music that was sung. I don't know exactly when it was, but we've had it here. We did have it over in the Civic Auditorium, and we brought people all the way from England for it, the Messiah, speaking of that which was being sung. And you've heard this being sung in the Messiah. Who shall abide in the day of His coming and shall stand when He appears? So again, a part of the music there that he's referring back to that was done there in the auditorium. And I don't know how many of you have ever heard that. Do you know what I'm referring to? The songs, the music? It's beautiful. It's awesome. Some of Mr. Armstrong's favorite. And so I know I remember hearing it at Brick of Wood. Matter of fact, I think he worked with the London Philharmonic at one point in time, and Ambassador College, they got together, and the choir was able to speak with them, able to be with them at the same time. This whole stage was filled with the London Philharmonic doing this music, and the Ambassador Choir there as well with them at the same time, and that was awesome, very inspiring, and kind of puts chills up and down your spine. But anyway, Malachi 3, verse 2 goes on to say, for He is like a refiner's fire and like fuller's soap. You know, we go through things. You think of what we need to go through various things in our life to be purified, to be cleansed, and to clean up our lives and to get our lives focused and stay focused. And it's not just a matter of, we tend to do this, though. We tend to do focus more at one time, especially when we're first called. We get very focused, and then human nature sets in, and we begin at some point. It's just a part of the process to do some coasting. It happens. And then get fired up again, or at different times in various sermons or various things happen in our life that God uses to help fire us up again. And this is one of those occasions where God is blessing us and helping us to get fired up again, because we don't have much distance to go. And this is the time to make sure that we're throwing ourselves into this, that, as Mr. Armstrong said, get behind this thing. This is the last part of getting behind it and being deeply focused. Physically, it is physical and it is spiritual. They go hand in hand. You can't separate the two. So again here, for he's like a refiner's fire and like fuller's soap, and he shall sit as a refiner and a purifier of silver. Beautiful verses here. I think of trials we go through in life and how some of us, it was being discussed here just before service, as we go through various kinds of trials, but in the world, everybody goes through trials in life. Everybody goes through different kinds of hardships at some point in their life, physical life. You can't live physical life without it. But in the church, it's unique. God uses those occasions to teach us, to mold and fashion on a spiritual plane something in our minds that otherwise we wouldn't have, people in the world don't have that kind of opportunity. But we do. There are things we can grow in depth and understanding about God's plan and purpose that others can't have. But we have that opportunity. That's why, in time, I hope we come to the point where we genuinely begin to understand and appreciate the hardships of life, some of the struggles of life. It wasn't meant to be easy, because it's through the hardships and the fire and the trials that you can grow more, that you can draw closer to God. He said here, now, Jesus didn't do any of these things when he came the first time. Not a one of these things. And he shall purify the sons of Levi. So again, here is talking about him coming and things that are going to take place. But before he comes, throughout the last 6,000 years, everyone that's gone through the process has had to go through this, to be purified and strengthened. But in the last couple of thousand years, as Jesus Christ worked directly with that, with the church, in a larger way than what was done before. And it's just going to continue to increase. Going to the millennium, all the people are going to have opportunity to begin being refined. And he shall purify the sons of Levi. Now, he went on to say here, he didn't do that when he came before. It wasn't about the physical tribe. And purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Eternal an offering in righteousness. And so that's really been the work for the last couple of thousand years that Jesus Christ has been doing in the church and what he's given to the church. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Eternal, as in the days of old, and as in the former days. And he said here, that didn't happen when he came before. The Jews rejected him. Judah and Jerusalem was not a pleasant offering that was so happy and peaceful and joyous and all of that. So he's making it very clear here, this is about the church, what God is doing with the church. It was talking about those things that would lead up to his coming and then what would happen beyond that. Verse 5, and I will come near to you in judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the idolaters. So again, we're living in an age when things are going to be brought to a head. And brethren, an exciting time for God's church to be a part of something as we approach some of the things that are taking place in the world. Things are speeding up out there. They're being stirred up more and more, but they're being held back too. I hope you understand that. They're being held back too because they can't proceed too fast. There's enough that individuals and people are being worked with in a way to prepare them for something that's coming or things that are coming, but just enough to keep us focused, enough to work with different people, different leaders, for things they're going to be doing later on. I think of all the mess we're going through in this country, politics. And what we're going through right now is not by chance. There are things coming to the surface that people are having to contend with. There are things coming to the surface that people are beginning to have to deal with that in times past they haven't had to think about in the same way. And just wait. You've seen nothing yet. You've seen nothing yet for what's coming. But just want to say that I think of some of the things Mr. Armstrong is going to say that'll be in the next sermon here. He's talking about what's happening in the world in their particular time and things that have happened in some of the different nations. And again, they felt there were certain things coming together then. But I think of some of the newscasters last night talking about what was happening in Turkey and their president, Erdogan. He says they're under control now, and they well may be. But it shook some people up because they realize how strategic that part of the world is. Turkey is. And just to let you know, Turkey's in prophecy in a very powerful way at the end time. There's some things that still have to take place there that are going to take place that have to do with Israel and betrayal that will come out in time. But they're already in the works. It's just a matter of time before they come to a head. And so I was wondering last night, is this going to be the beginning of that, or is this a part of that that's taking place? Because there are things we don't understand until they've happened, and then we can see them clearly. But God hasn't given us to know exactly what it is that's going to transpire in some of those things. But they're powerful, brethren. And some of the things that continue on, as soon as what happened in Nice, France, and as soon as that happened, then what's the next thing here? Turkey. And that becomes something that's not even being talked about in the same way. Now it is again today a little bit, but you know, what an atrocious, sick world we live in. But it's nothing compared to what's taking place and what's being stirred up out there. And I hope you can see why things are happening, but why things are being held back. There's just a right mixture over the next year, because this is the time we have to get the book out and to get a beginning of a message out, and then our work is done as far as the body is concerned. Not on ourselves, but as far as what we're supporting and what we're a part of. That's why it's so important. This is the time we have right now in front of us to get done what we need to get done right now, because we're not going to be doing it for 3 years. We're not going to be doing this, all of us together, for 3 years. There are things that are going to come to a screeching halt at some point in time, and what we're able to accomplish just in this country alone. But God's work continues, and some of the things God's going to do through certain ones is going to continue all the way to the end. So we live in awesome times. And the message again, brethren, apply yourself. If you've been coasting, quit coasting. Because I'm tired of writing letters to people and telling them you're separated from the body right now. You're suspended from Sabbath. You're suspended from fellowship. Still doing it. Or you are fully cut off from God's church. You're no longer a part of God's church. And that's why it talks about, when it talks about not fearing, we should have nothing to fear. If we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, if we're applying ourselves, if we're repenting, if we're seeking to grow, if we're seeking to be of the same mind, if we're seeking to be stirred up in spirit, to be behind this thing, as Mr. Armstrong said, that message is for today, more than it was back then. To be behind this thing and what God is doing, and to have the vision that God wants us to have. This is the last stage of the run in front of us. The finish line is right ahead of us. We can see it. Let's throw ourselves into it, brother.